This is Audible.
Bourbon Bliss, Bootleg Springs, Book 4. Written by Claire Kingsley with Lucy Score. Narrated by Natalie Duke and Stephen Dexter.
Chapter 1. George. My knee hurt more than it should. I was more than 8 weeks post-surgery for a torn ACL, and it shouldn't have been this sore. Instead of wandering around the VIP room at Blue Martini, a favorite club among my teammates in Philly, I was chilling in a plush booth with my leg propped up. The dim lights cast a bluish tint over the room. I could still hear the club music bumping through the walls, but our private party had mellowed. The smooth R&B sounded like Rex's patented sex playlist. Judging by the way my teammate had his latest groupie backed up against a wall, it probably was his sex playlist. I adjusted my leg, trying not to visibly wince. I should probably have been home icing it, but Rex had threatened to drive to my place and drag me out tonight if I didn't come, and I hadn't exactly admitted how bad it was. I talked to my agent already, and my coach. My teammates, however, hadn't heard the news. My career as a pro football player was officially over. In some ways, it was devastating. Football was the only thing I really knew. I'd been playing since I was 5. But from the moment I'd gone down on the field, my knee screaming with pain, I'd known. It was my second ACL tear in 5 years. I'd come back from the first one. You didn't come back from 2. Not when they were the same knee and you were a 32-year-old receiver. Despite the way everyone, from doctors to my agent, had tried to make the best of it, I'd known. It was a career ender. No amount of PT was going to save me. So when my doctor had given me the final verdict a few days ago, I hadn't been surprised. Wasn't happy about it, but not surprised either.
Sup, GT?
Deacon Phillips, defensive player of the year, 5-time All-Pro linebacker. He was getting up there in years, just like me, but he'd managed to get through the season without any injuries. I leaned back like I wasn't elevating my knee, just relaxing in the club, like I was too cool to make any effort. Taking in the scenery.
Bullshit!
He set his beer down on the table and slid into the booth.
Don't mess with me, man. You coming back?
I looked away. The guys weren't going to like this. I knew they were all holding out hope. They'd made it to the playoffs without me, but lost the first game. A bitterly disappointing end to what had begun as a perfect season. We'd all been hoping I'd pull through and we'd have another shot next year. No, man, I'm not coming back from this one.
Shit,
Deacon said under his breath. He shook his head.
Can't they give you a bionic leg now or something? Jesus, this is it for you? Really?
I nodded, letting it sink in as I said it aloud. Yep, I'm done. No more football. I had a feeling it was coming, but this is brutal, bro. I don't know what to say. Don't give me any pity crap. I had a good run. Y'all are going to be fine without me. He shook his head like he didn't believe me. I took a deep breath, glancing around the room at a dozen or so of the guys I'd played with for the last few years. The worst part was the feeling that I was letting them down, not to mention the coaches and staff. They'd pinned a lot of their hopes on me and these magic hands. Sticky as my hands were, they didn't do me any good without legs to run on. Without my wheels, I was just another tall guy with big hands.
Anyone else know?
Deacon asked. The organization knows. It's official. I need to start telling the rest of the guys, though.
Shit.
Yeah, there wasn't much more to say. He glanced over his shoulder, and I knew exactly who he was looking at. Mackenzie Lyons, my on-again, off-again, currently off-again girlfriend. She'd arrived about 10 minutes ago, and so far she seemed to be pretending to avoid me. I wondered if she'd known I'd be here. I'd never figured out how so many women seemed to find where my teammates and I were hanging out. No one ever took credit for inviting them, yet there were always women around. Wasn't sure how I felt about seeing Mackenzie tonight. This wasn't exactly a high point for me. Kind of a low, really. Did I want her here to witness the end of my career? Maybe I'd call it an early night and bail now. As if she could see how close I was to getting up and leaving, Mackenzie broke off from the conversation she was having with a woman I didn't know, set her eyes on me, and walked to my table. Even I had to admit, she looked hot in that tight black dress and heels.
"Trust me, dude," Deacon said as he got up. "Hit that while you still can."
"Deacon?"
Mackenzie said, and he tipped his chin to her before walking away. I gestured for her to sit. She gracefully lowered herself down next to me.
"How's the knee?"
"It's great," I lied.
"Yeah?"
Her face brightened.
"I've been worried about you."
We'd broken up again at the beginning of last season. To her credit, she'd called to see if I needed anything after my surgery. Considering we weren't together, she hadn't needed to do that, so I'd appreciated the gesture.
"You know me, I'll be fine. I always bounce back."
"Yeah, you do."
She gently nudged me and nibbled on her bottom lip. I'd have been lying if I said I wasn't tempted. Her expression, flirtatious and suggestive, told me she was a sure thing tonight. I could slide my hands up those supple thighs, lean in and brush my lips across the sensitive skin at the base of her neck, get her hot for me, take her back to my place. Nothing wrong with some good sex. Sounded nice right about now. But then would come the complications, the questions. I wasn't really a one-night stand guy, and she knew it. Would she want to get back together? What would she want from me if we did? I knew the answer to that question, and it was enough to stay my hand, keep me from reaching out to caress the obscene amount of thigh showing beneath her short skirt. She'd want expensive dinners, gifts, preferably of the designer variety, vacations, exclusive locales, first-class, five-star hotels. It was why Mackenzie dated athletes, why she dated me. I dated worse before her, women who were brazen and unapologetic in their pursuit of the elusive pro-athlete boyfriend. Mackenzie had at least attempted to give me access to her feelings, to care about more than what I could buy her or the status dating me afforded her, but it hadn't been enough. There was still the expectation of more, more money, more gifts, more luxury. A lot of the guys I played with were fine with that, happy to shower their girlfriends with diamonds and designer purses, pay for their luxury apartments and expensive cars. To them, it was a business transaction. They provided a certain lifestyle while the women provided certain comforts, a hot date to be seen with, kinky sex behind closed doors, or sometimes in front of them. That wasn't enough for me. I wanted more. I wanted feelings. Something real. The guys gave me shit about my supposedly high standards, but to me it wasn't that the groupies and wannabe starlets weren't hot enough. The problem was those women wanted me for all the wrong reasons. They wanted G.T. Thompson, all-pro receiver. They didn't want me. I'd thought Mackenzie might be different, thought it twice now, and twice I'd been wrong. I wasn't going down that path again, regardless of how insane she looked in that curve-hugging black dress.
"What's wrong?"
she cooed. She was laying it on thick tonight, made me wonder what her game was. She reached out to draw her fingernails lightly upon my shin over my pants.
"Lonely?"
"Nah, I'm good," I lied. "Second time tonight. Just keeping it mellow." She kept her fingers on my leg, brushing them up and down. Familiar, too familiar, but I didn't want to move in case I winced.
"Should we get a bottle of champagne?"
she asked.
"Have a little celebration?"
"What are we celebrating?"
"Second chances."
I raised my eyebrows. If she was talking about us, we'd blown through a second chance already.
"Second chances for what? And do you mean second or third?"
The corners of her mouth tilted upward.
I mean next season, a second chance at the playoffs.
The words came out before I could stop them. I'm out, Mac. There is no next season. A cloud of emotion passed across her features. Shock, maybe horror. Was she really that upset for me?
What?
She asked. I'm not coming back. I'm done with football.
You're not serious,
she said, the shock melting into a false smile, her bright red lips parting over her sparkling white teeth.
Of course you're coming back. You always bounce back.
Not this time. Her back straightened and she shifted away.
You're retiring?
I nodded. There wasn't much more to say. The curve had gone out of her spine, so she no longer arched her back, emphasizing her boobs and admittedly fantastic ass. She had a wicked resting bitch face, and it was out in full force. No more softness, no more compassion.
I didn't realize.
She stood, clutching her small sequined purse to her body.
I'm sorry to hear it.
Shit happens, I said, spreading my arms wide again, still playing the part of the guy who was too mellow to let anything faze him.
Of course, she said, faking another smile. Good to see you, GT. Take care.
I tipped my chin. Take care. She walked away without looking back. It didn't matter that her ass looked great in that dress. The sultry sway of her hips left me feeling nauseated, not aroused. I wasn't sure why being rejected by a woman I didn't want stung so bad, but it did. The second she'd realized my career was over, she'd been out, totally uninterested. It shouldn't have surprised me, but I thought Mackenzie might care enough to at least ask if I was okay, maybe be concerned about my future, ask what I was going to do next, but she hadn't. And it shouldn't have mattered, but it did. I looked around at my teammates, my friends, at the girls dressed to kill in their tight dresses and expensive heels. I was surrounded by beauty, attractive people, beautiful clothes, but it was hollow, empty, and meaningless. And I realized I was ready to move on, ready to leave the life of a pro athlete behind me and take a new path. My knees still fucking hurt, and Mackenzie's rejection stung. But there had to be more for me out there somewhere. A world that valued me for more than playing a game. And maybe she was out there too. The woman who'd see me as more than a guy who was good at catching a ball.
Chapter 2, June. The text from my sister Cassidy came just as I was finishing my workday, her number lighting up my phone. I waited to check while I finished what I was doing. I plugged a few more numbers into the spreadsheet, already knowing the result. I could do the calculations in my head faster than I could create the data sets and tables. But my client needed the numbers to exist somewhere other than my brain, hence spreadsheets and graphs. With that finished, I saved my work and closed my laptop. I worked from my home office 89.2% of the time. The other 10.8% was spent in Baltimore, where my company was located. I was an actuary, and a highly paid one at that. I'd started my career working for a large insurance company, but made the switch to consulting a few years ago. It was a situation that suited me well. I liked my work and was proficient at it, but staying in Bootleg Springs had been a priority. My current arrangement allowed me to do just that. Contrary to what my sister seemed to believe, I didn't stay in Bootleg because I was afraid to venture into the wider world. I stayed because it suited me. It was quiet. Most of the time, at least. I knew everyone in town. I had a routine. My family was here. I saw no compelling reason to leave. I picked up my phone to read Cassidy's text. Cassidy. Girls' night, Judy. We're going to the lookout. Pick you up at 8. Me. It's Thursday. Cassidy. So? Me. We go out on Fridays. Cassidy. I know, but it's spontaneous. Scarlett and Leah May are coming, too. It'll be fun. Me. Okay, but picking me up won't be necessary. I'll meet you there. I sighed and put down my phone.
I didn't particularly want to go out tonight. It was a weeknight. But that didn't mean the lookout would be any less rowdy than a Friday. It would be loud, and there would probably be a bar fight. But I liked making my younger sister happy. Not that I had any idea why drinking alcoholic beverages in a noisy bar produced feelings of happiness in Cassidy and her friends. But it did, so I obliged. There were a lot of things I didn't understand about Cassidy. In fact, there were a lot of things I didn't understand about people in general. I'd accepted that a long time ago. I didn't try to fit in or figure out why humans perplexed me. I didn't understand them, but I didn't have the drive to try either. People were odd. They said things they didn't mean and did things that bore no relationship to what they said. I found them unpredictable and therefore uncomfortable. Numbers, on the other hand, made sense. They were reliable. They obeyed the rules and behaved in a predictable manner. As an example, I could do complex mathematical equations in my head, but I couldn't fathom why my sister and Bowie had failed to engage in a romantic relationship for years when it had been clear to everyone they had feelings for each other. Numbers made sense. People did not. Yet I lived in a world where people existed, and I found that it pleased the people I cared about if I spent time interacting with them, which sometimes meant joining my sister for a girls' night at the lookout on a Thursday. I prepared my dinner, dividing the meal precisely into two portions. One I placed on a plate while the other went into the refrigerator for tomorrow. Although I generally only cooked for one person, myself, I had a collection of Cooking for Two cookbooks on a shelf in my kitchen. Cooking twice what I needed increased my kitchen efficiency, allowing me to prepare half the number of meals I would otherwise need. "Hey, Junie." Jonah came downstairs, running a towel over his wet hair. "That smells good." I stiffened. Did he mean he wanted to share, or was he simply commenting on the pleasant aroma of my meal? "It's likely the combination of basil and garlic that produces the scent you're enjoying," I said. Cassidy would say it would be polite to offer him some. "Would you like a portion?" "Oh, thanks, but no," he said. "I'm doing intermittent fasting, so I'm not eating again until tomorrow." "Good. I made the second portion for myself to eat tomorrow, so that works out for both of us." He smiled in a way that made me wonder if he was amused or irritated with me. It was hard for me to tell. "Guess so. Do you have plans tonight?" "Yes." "Okay. What are they?" "Girls' night at the lookout." "Sounds fun," he said. "I have to be up early in the morning, so I'm staying in. Feel free to call me if you need a ride or anything, though." "The chance of me overindulging in alcohol is approximately 1%, I said. "I'm sure I'll be able to drive myself, but thank you for the offer." He smiled again. "No problem." Jonah was my first ever roommate. I'd gone from living with my parents and sister to living alone. I'd even lived alone in college. I didn't like sharing my space. Another person meant someone moving things from their rightful places, making messes, and worst of all, failing to understand the importance of football on Sundays. But Jonah was a pleasant roommate. He was unobtrusive, clean, and cooked his own meals. And he never ever tried to dictate the television schedule when there were games on. We'd even watch the Super Bowl together, although at the time I'd still been mourning my fantasy football league loss. Jonah went off to do whatever it was Jonah did. I had my dinner, then settled onto the couch with a book. Cassidy, Scarlett, and Leah May were no doubt using this time to prepare for the upcoming evening. Women seemed to feel a night out necessitated a lengthy routine of makeup application, the use of various hair products and heated appliances, and a great deal of indecision when it came to clothing choices. Wardrobe decisions were simple calculations. You took the occasion, time of day, expected attendees, and venue, and accounted for the season and current weather conditions. Occasion: spontaneous girls' night. Time of day: weeknight evening. Expected attendees: Cassidy, Scarlett, Leah May, and various other Bootleg Springs residents. Venue: the lookout. Season and current weather conditions: early February, cold and dry. Outcome: sweater, jeans, thick socks, boots. It had taken me no more than a few seconds to reach the appropriate conclusion. As for the rest of the primping routine, I saw no need to augment my appearance with cosmetics or spend a great deal of time and effort on my hair. It wasn't as if I was going to the lookout to attract a mate. Neither were the other women in my life, of course. They were all firmly ensconced in committed relationships, which made their desire to spend so much time on their appearance even more perplexing. Who were they dressing up for, now that they were no longer single? I didn't understand people. At 7:55, I got up and put on my boots and coat. I lived a short drive from the lookout, and if past behavior served as an accurate predictor of future outcomes, and I knew that it did, the other girls would arrive between 5 and 15 minutes after the agreed-upon time. In other words, I was not in a rush. To my surprise, when I arrived at the lookout at 8:02, Cassidy's car was in the parking lot. I opened the door to the bar, steeling myself for the assault on my senses. The lookout was loud, music and voices spilling out into the cold night. Warm air engulfed me when I stepped inside, about 2 degrees above what I found comfortable. Pausing, I gave myself a few seconds to find equilibrium in this new environment. It required tuning things out, erecting a barrier between my brain and the sensory input that beat at me. When I felt suitably insulated, I joined my sister and her friends at their table. "Junie," Cassidy said with a smile. "I'm so glad you came out with us." I smiled and gave her a stiff hug. Cassidy and I looked quite a bit alike, both with dark blonde hair and green eyes, the same upturned, lightly freckled noses. But our appearance was where the similarities ended. Our personalities were remarkably dissimilar, despite our shared genetics. Of course, when it came to personality, I was remarkably dissimilar to everyone in Bootleg Springs, familial relations included. However, our differences hadn't inhibited our personal relationship. I'd always maintained a positive rapport with Cassidy. I felt a great deal of affection for my sister. We weren't like other siblings. We'd rarely bickered or argued, even as children. We looked out for each other, each in our own way, and I appreciated that. "I like your sweater," Leah May said, pointing at my clothing choice. "Thank you. The weather is cold, so a sweater seemed prudent." "And it's cute, too," she said. I gave her a small nod. Leah May was pleasant, considered beautiful in the traditional way. She was tall and thin, with long blonde hair and noticeable gap between her two front teeth. She'd been a model and on a reality TV show, but now she was back in Bootleg Springs and dating Jameson Bodine. They appeared well-suited for each other and happy in their relationship. That was good. Jameson was my favorite of the Bodine men. He didn't talk a lot, which made spending time with him comfortable. I'd once heard someone say they thought Jameson and I should date. I didn't have much desire to date anyone, but I'd been particularly surprised by the suggestion. I'd be the first to admit, I didn't understand human relationships. But it seemed to me, from what I did know, that a functioning relationship required a certain degree of communication. Putting two people together who didn't talk very much seemed like a recipe for failure. Scarlett had also chosen a sweater for her evening attire. Hers hung off one shoulder, leaving her bra strap visible. I didn't know if that was a conscious choice or if her sweater didn't fit right. Scarlett was petite, and I suspected she often found clothing too large for her small frame. She grabbed her sweater at the neck, pulling it in and out as if to create a breeze beneath it. "I don't know about you, but I'm getting hot. I might be ditching mine." "You wearing anything but your bra underneath?" Cassidy asked. Scarlett held her sweater out and peered in, as if she'd forgotten what she was wearing. "Well, yeah, I'm not going to strip, silly." "Why not?" Cassidy asked. "Might be fun." "What's got you so frisky tonight?" Scarlett asked. Cassidy shrugged. "Nothing. I'm just in a good mood. Want to have some fun." "Baby, fun is my middle name," Scarlett said. "Let's get you nice and liquored up so you can go home and have wild, drunken sex with Bowie." I drew my eyebrows in. Intoxication carries a high probability of nausea and vomiting. I fail to see how that's conducive to engaging in sexual intercourse, especially of the wild variety. Cassidy patted my shoulder. "You have a point there, Junebug, but getting a little tipsy is fun sometimes." That didn't precisely address my point, but it didn't matter. I took a seat on one of the empty stools and set my handbag on the table. The band started a new song, and a few couples moved in front of the tiny stage to dance. It was the oddest thing. The beat was too slow for much movement. They stood together, swaying back and forth, hardly moving their feet. I didn't grasp the appeal of any sort of dancing, but I'd always found slow dancing particularly inexplicable. Gibson Bodine strummed his guitar and sang into the microphone while his bandmates, Hung and Corbin, played along. They were an eclectic-looking mix of men. Gibson was tall and bearded, his expression usually some variation of a scowl. Hung was a gray-haired Asian man, and Corbin looked like he still belonged in high school, with smooth, dark skin and thick hair. Cassidy brought me a drink, and I sipped it quietly. The girls talked about the men, and cats, in their lives, which didn't leave me much to add to the conversation, but I didn't mind too much. After a while, I pulled a book out of my handbag and laid it out on the table to read. "Hey, what are you doing here?" Cassidy asked, drawing my attention away from my book. Bowie Bodine put his arms around her. "I missed you." "It's girls' night," she said, but there wasn't any conviction behind her words. Even I could tell she was glad to see him, which I found odd, considering they lived together. They were in the middle of a renovation, turning their duplex into a single residence. Bowie had likely seen Cassidy less than 2 hours ago. I didn't understand how that was long enough to miss a person, but I let the question drift from my mind. To the surprise of everyone but me, Jameson and Devlin weren't far behind Bowie. Scarlett laughed and gave Devlin a playful smack on the chest for crashing girls' night, but then grabbed him by the front of his shirt and gave him a rather inappropriate kiss. Liam A. didn't even pretend she wasn't happy to see Jameson, throwing her arms around his neck and hugging him. I found myself smiling as I watched my sister and her friends. Our friends. I liked seeing them happy. It reminded me of the way I felt around my parents. They were happy, so I was happy for them.
"Hey, Junie."
Jameson took a seat across from me.
"Good book?"
"It's an analytical look at the history of statistics in American professional sports."
"Sounds right up your alley," he said.
"Can I get you another drink?"
Bowie asked me.
"I'm buying."
I gestured to my half-finished bourbon. "No, thank you. I already calculated the ratio of time to bourbon consumption to ensure I'm in the proper frame of mind to drive myself home." He smiled.
"Well, I wouldn't want to mess with math."
Drinks were passed around, and my sister and friends all engaged in lively conversation. I watched, feeling detached. It wasn't their fault. They'd always done their best to include me. It wasn't even the fact that they were all coupled off, and I was the lone single person at our table. I usually felt this sort of social detachment. It was as if I was a scientist in a lab, observing, but apart. The vast majority of the time, this state of affairs didn't bother me in the least. It was just the way things were. But tonight, the separateness I felt did bother me. I wasn't certain as to why. Finally, I decided I could slip out without eliciting any unnecessary attention. Instead of heading for the solace of home, I found myself driving in the other direction, toward my parents' house. My mother and father still lived in the same house where Cassidy and I had grown up. It hadn't changed much since I'd moved out. A little more worn, perhaps, although they kept it in pristine condition. And it still smelled the same, a mixture of cinnamon and vanilla that always reminded me of the cookies my mom loved to bake. I went in without knocking, like I always did, and found my dad dozing on the couch. The TV was on, casting flickers of light across the dim room. Dad's crossed arms rose and fell as he breathed, his white mustache twitching. I clicked the door closed and he startled, his deep intake of breath vibrating in his throat like a loud snore.
"Oh, Junebug," he said with a smile. "You caught me napping."
"Did you have a particularly tiring day?" I asked as I sat on the couch next to him. "You should be careful not to overexert yourself."
"I'm all right. What brings you here tonight?"
I looked away, the light of the muted TV drawing my gaze. I wasn't sure how to answer his question. I could have gone straight home. Home was comfortable. I liked it there. Had Cassidy not asked me to meet them at the lookout, I'd have been perfectly content to spend my evening at home. However, I had gone to the lookout, and something about that had left me feeling unsettled in ways I didn't know how to articulate. Cassidy's having a girls' night, so I was at the lookout. The men appeared to be unsatisfied with their significant others spending the evening without their company.
So the men crashed your girls' night, and it turned into a double date?
Triple. Leah May and Jameson were also there.
Ah, yes, of course they were.
He paused and appraised me through slightly narrowed eyes.
You feeling a little bit left out?
No, I said, and it wasn't a lie exactly. They took care to make sure I was included. Dad smiled. He had the kindest, gentlest smile.
I'm sure they did. But that doesn't mean you didn't feel a bit on the outside.
I suppose I did. But it's all right. Considering I was the lone single female in the group, it's not surprising. He picked up the remote.
Should we see if there's a game on?
This was why I'd come. Dad understood me. I settled back into the couch and folded my hands in my lap. Yes, I think we should. Dad patted me on the knee and turned the channel.
Chapter 3. George. The sun filtered through the trees as I sped down the highway. It was cold out there, and I'd felt the tires slip on slick ice in a few shady places. Had to be careful. I'd only passed 2, maybe 3 cars along the highway. This town I was headed to, Bootleg Springs, was in the middle of nowhere. My sister Shelby had said it was remote, but I was starting to wonder if I'd missed it. Shelby had been in Bootleg Springs since last November. I wasn't sure what she was doing out there. My younger sister always had something cooking. Truth was, I hadn't seen Shelby a lot over the last 10 years. We kept in touch through texts and Skype calls and spent a few holidays with our parents down in Charlotte, and I'd taken the whole family on a cruise a few years ago during the off-season. But it wasn't just a Thompson sibling reunion that had me headed into the mountains of West Virginia. Apparently, this place was known for their hot springs. Some people even said they had healing properties. When I'd chatted with Shelby a few days ago, she'd suggested I come out and stay a while. She'd said the town was nice, and at this point, I'd do just about anything if it would help rehab my knee. It wasn't like I had anything else going on. There were perks to being unemployed. The highway curved, leading into a longer, straight stretch. A car came toward me, headed in the opposite direction. A gorgeous black Dodge Charger, badass car. I cracked the window to listen to the engine while it passed. I could just hear the faint rumble of that throaty purr. Nothing like a hot muscle car with an owner who knew how to make her sing. But before I could admire the hum of the Charger's engine, a deer darted across the road right in front of the other car. The Charger swerved, narrowly missing the animal. Its tires must have hit an icy patch, and the car spun in a tight circle, veering off the road. I clenched my steering wheel as I watched it happen, as if in slow motion, powerless to help. The driver tried to correct, but the car slammed into a tree with a loud crunch. I pumped my brakes, careful on the ice, and pulled across the empty highway. As soon as I was safely stopped on the side of the road, I flew out of the car and ran over to see if the driver was okay. The driver's side door was pinned against the trunk of the tree. I went to the passenger side and yanked the door open. Bending down, I leaned against the heavy metal door and peered inside. "Are you okay?" The driver looked dazed. He was dressed in a black knit hat and thick coat, his jaw covered with dark facial hair. He had a hand on his forehead, but I didn't see blood. Seemed like a good sign.
"What the fuck?"
he muttered. "You okay, man? Need help getting out of there?" He looked at me and blinked a few times, like he was trying to figure out what had just happened. One hand still gripped the steering wheel, his knuckles white. After prying his hand open and flexing his fingers a few times, he nodded. I reached in and helped him across the seat, then made sure he was stable on his feet before I let go of his thick forearm. He put his hand on the car, probably to steady himself.
Holy shit. I didn't hit her, did I?
The deer? I asked. No, she ran off.
He nodded, still visibly dazed.
Are you hurt?
I don't think so. Hit my head, but that's nothing.
I don't know, man. A head injury isn't something to fuck around with, trust me.
His eyes seemed to clear, and he straightened.
Right, yeah. Oh, fuck, my car.
Now that I was fairly sure the guy was all right, I turned my attention to the Charger. It would have been a damn shame to get even a scratch on this beauty, and this was much worse than a scratch. I couldn't see the extent of the damage from this side, but it couldn't have been pretty.
You have someone you can call, or can I give you a ride somewhere? I'm not sure where you were headed.
Fuck,
he muttered again.
Yeah, I'll call one of my brothers.
Sure, I'll wait to make sure you get where you need to go.
He met my eyes for the first time, like it was sinking in that I was there.
Thanks for stopping. Appreciate it.
No problem. I held out my hand. G.T. Thompson.
Gibson Bodine.
He took my hand in a firm grip and shook.
Really? Thank you.
Anytime. Looks like you're going to need a tow.
Yeah. Damn it. Fucking deer.
I stepped aside and waited while Gibson made a few calls. He paced back and forth next to his car, his gravelly voice thick with frustration. I cupped my hands in front of my face and blew into them. It was damn cold out here. When he finished, he slid his phone into the back pocket of his jeans.
My brother's on his way. He lives in town, so he's only a few minutes away. Tow truck is on its way, too.
All right, you want me to hang out until they get here?
No, man, you can go. It's colder than shit out here.
He glanced at his car, his expression pained.
Thanks for stopping.
Of course. You sure you're all right?
Yeah, I'm not hurt. Can't say the same for her.
He nodded toward the Charger.
But I'll fix her.
I said goodbye to Gibson Bodine, but took my time once I got back in my car, pretended to look at my phone for a few minutes while the heat blasted. He'd said he was fine, but I didn't want to leave him out here alone, just in case. It didn't take long before another car pulled up and a guy got out. Only then did I get back on the highway and continue on to Bootleg Springs. The little place I was renting was just outside town, on the shores of the pristine mountain lake. No ice crusted the top of the water. Steam rose from the surface, and I remembered the hot springs. Looked like the lake water was warm enough to stay liquid, even through the cold winter. The sky was clear, and white snow coated the trees. The peace and quiet was going to do me some good. Even after witnessing that car accident, I could feel myself relaxing, my stress unraveling. Felt good. I liked this place already. My sister was not one to waste time. She wanted to get together the second I arrived, so once I got my things situated in my rental cabin, I drove into town to meet her. Bootleg Springs was the definition of quaint. Clean streets, fresh paint on many of the building facades, hand-painted signs announced businesses like Yeehaw Yarn and Coffee, the Rusty Tool, and Moonshine Diner, where I was meeting Shelby. Warm air, scented with a rich mixture of delicious food smells, greeted me when I walked inside. My stomach rumbled. I spotted Shelby at a booth near the back, her face lighting up with a big smile. She stood as I approached, and I wrapped her in a bear hug, gave her a good squeeze. She was a lot smaller than me, but then I was 6'5", so most people were. Her brown hair was pulled back, and she wore a light gray sweater and jeans. We looked oddly alike, considering we weren't biologically related. My parents had adopted Shelby when she was a baby. Hey, sis, I said as I slid into the booth opposite her. Long time no see.
Hey, GT, you look great. How's the knee?
I straightened my leg beneath the table and rubbed above my kneecap.
It's good.
Liar.
I'm not lying. It is good. Could be better, though.
She nodded.
How are you doing with, you know, everything else?
You mean the end of my football career?
Yeah, that.
I'm all right. I put my hands up in protest before she could disagree with me.
Shelby, I swear, I knew it was coming. Besides, I'm too old to keep getting beat to hell like that. I'm lucky the worst of it is my knee.
True, but this is a big deal. I know you've talked about retiring before, but it must be hard to have the choice out of your hands.
I've made my peace with it. She smiled.
Good.
The waitress, a woman with a red beehive hairdo and a name tag that said Clarabel, came to take our order. Shelby chose an open-faced turkey sandwich. I went for the meatloaf and mashed potatoes, my favorite.
How's little Marshmallow?
Shelby asked after Clarabel left. She's adorable, obviously, I said with a grin. Marshmallow, or Mellow for short, was my pet bunny, a Netherland dwarf. She was tiny, soft, and pure white. I miss her already, but Andrea's taking care of her for me while I'm away.
Aww, I need to come visit her.
You should. This being unemployed thing makes that a lot easier. I have all kinds of time.
I'm so relieved, she said. Mom and Dad have been worried about you, but you seem like you're taking everything in stride.
Doing my best, I said. But you need to tell me more about this hot spring.
Right.
She got out her phone and started typing.
I'll just text you the directions. It's easier than trying to explain.
Is it hard to find? I asked.
Kind of, yeah,
she said.
There are a few places to soak, but I found a really good one. It's more private. I've only been out there once, but it was so nice.
We chatted for a few more minutes until Clarabel brought our food, and holy hell, it was good. Down-home cooking at its best. Now I really liked this place. I had a feeling I was going to become a regular moonshine customer during my stay. I was already wondering how soon was too soon to order another meal. I wanted to dig into that open-faced turkey sandwich next. I glanced up as I ate and noticed a woman sitting a few booths away. She had dark blonde hair that hung carelessly around her shoulders. No makeup. The sleeve of her navy sweater slid down her arm as she tucked a strand of hair behind her ear. She had her phone in one hand and she picked up a pen with the other. Her eyes darted back and forth between her phone and a notebook as she wrote something down. She was cute, in a not-usually-my-type sort of way, but it wasn't so much her appearance that made me glance twice. Something about the way she moved caught my attention. She was precise and exacting, her eyes flicking back and forth as she jotted in that notebook of hers. I found myself gazing at her, wondering what she was doing, and then she spoke. Not to me. She was sitting alone and didn't appear to be talking to anyone. I couldn't make out what she was saying. She was muttering to herself. But for some reason, I found the whole thing fascinating.
Do you know who she is?
I asked Shelby, nodding my head in the direction of the muttering woman.
Oh, that's June Tucker.
Do you know her? I asked, still gazing at June. Of course Shelby would know everyone in town by now.
Not really. The locals haven't exactly been welcoming of my kind.
She didn't sound the least bit upset by that.
But I've seen her around.
And you see a lot. She wrinkled her nose.
She's different.
In what way? Shelby raised one shoulder in a slight shrug.
People say she's a little off. She doesn't interact like everyone else, but they still make a place for her. She's interesting.
I looked at June again. She appeared to be having a quiet argument with herself. I wasn't sure. The phone in her hand indicated she might be on a call, but there wasn't another voice coming from the speaker, and I didn't see earbuds or a headset. Maybe she really was talking to herself. She seemed focused, as if unaware that she was in a public place and people might think it odd that she was talking to herself, or maybe she just didn't care. Either way, it was hard to take my eyes off her.
Earth to GT.
Shelby snapped her fingers near my face.
Quit staring, you're being weird.
I grinned at her and motioned to her half-full plate with my fork. Are you going to finish that?
All yours.
She pushed the rest of her dinner to my side of the table. I loved eating with my sister. I always got her leftovers.
So, I know my timing isn't great, what with you having just arrived, but I'm going back to Pittsburgh in a couple of days.
I put my fork down.
What? Why? I got a gig writing some articles for a PR firm there,
she said.
It's not my favorite thing, but it pays, and I need to make some extra cash right now.
For half a second, I thought about offering Shelby money, but I knew exactly what she'd say if I did, if she didn't just smack me. I knew if she was in real trouble, she'd let me help, but otherwise she wanted to make it on her own. I respected that.
Well, that sucks, but you gotta do what you gotta do, I said.
Exactly. I'll be back. I still have research to do here.
She put her napkin down and rose from her seat.
I need to go to the restroom. I'll be right back.
Shelby's dinner was every bit as good as mine. I'd probably need to quit eating so much eventually, since I wouldn't be hitting training camp in a few months and losing any excess weight I'd put on during the off-season. But today was not that day. Movement caught my eye, and I looked over to find June getting up from her booth. She'd put her phone and notebook away, probably in the handbag she slung over one shoulder. She looked up, and our eyes met. Instead of breaking eye contact like strangers usually did, we stared at each other. Her face was impossible to read, expressionless, but something about her held me captivated. I couldn't look away. Maybe it was the way she looked directly at me, no batting eyelashes or attempts at acting coy. Her gaze left my face, traveling down to my feet, then back again. It didn't seem like she recognized me, but I couldn't be sure. There was no way to read what might be going on behind those pretty green eyes. With a little nod of her head, as if she'd just filed away her observations for later use, she left. I watched her go, feeling dazed, like I'd just taken a hard hit that had rung my bell. Why had she looked at me like that? Was she a fan of a rival team and hated me? Did she even know who I was? I had no idea. But suddenly, Bootleg Springs was a lot more interesting.
Chapter 4. George.
I hadn't been sure what to think about the claim that the hot springs in some little town in West Virginia might have healing properties, but as I lowered myself into the warm water, I wondered if maybe they were right. I sank down slowly, letting the heat loosen my tight muscles. The quiet and seclusion were just as relaxing as the water. Patches of snow still sat beneath the trees, and the air was chilly against my bare skin. The contrast between the cold air and warm water felt great. The spring itself was a pool of glassy, greenish-blue water. Plants crept in along the edges as if vying for the warmth and hydration, and steam rose from the surface. This place had been tricky to find, as Shelby had warned me, but there was no one around. I shifted a little to get comfortable, leaned my head back, and closed my eyes. Oh, yeah, this was good.
Excuse me, you're not supposed to be here.
My eyes flew open at the sound of a woman's voice. It was June, the woman I'd seen at the diner yesterday. Her dark blonde hair was in a ponytail, and she was dressed in a cream sweater, black leggings, and canvas low tops. Her piercing green eyes stared straight at me, unblinking.
What?
Way to go, GT. Great response. She crossed her arms, but her expression didn't change.
You are not on the list.
I glanced around like I was going to see a bouncer with a clipboard somewhere.
On what list?
There's a sign-up sheet. You're in my spot.
A sign-up sheet to sit in a hot spring?
Yes.
She blinked once. It was about then that I remembered I was naked. She probably couldn't see my junk, but if I got out with her standing there, I'd be treating her to quite the show. Inexplicably, I was sporting a semi. Was it her? She probably had a nice body under that bulky sweater, but it was hard to tell. And it wasn't like she was flirting with me, not in the least. She was probably the least flirtatious woman I'd ever met, so I had no idea why my dick was trying to cause a scene. Partial erection or not, this water felt amazing. I didn't particularly want to get out. Maybe I could talk her into letting me have more time.
Listen, I'm sorry about taking your spot. I honestly didn't know. I'm not from around here, and no one told me there was a sign-up sheet. My sister said, try the hot springs, so here I am.
I grinned at her, spreading my arms to the sides.
That doesn't change the fact that it's my time.
This does present a predicament, doesn't it? I rubbed my jaw. I guess you'll just have to get in with me. Obviously, she wasn't going to, but maybe she'd offer to come back in an hour. She set her bag down and pulled off her sweater, revealing a white tank top underneath. My mouth dropped open as I watched her fold her sweater and put it in her bag. Then she hooked her thumbs under the waistband of her leggings and started to slide them down.
What are you doing?
I asked. She stopped, bent at the waist, her pants partway down, and looked at me. Her expression still hadn't changed.
I'm getting in.
What?
You just said I should get in with you. I decided your solution is acceptable. I usually prefer to soak alone, but this time I'll make an exception.
Why?
It was a weird question, but it was the first thing that popped into my head. She tilted her head, still bent over.
You weren't aware of the sign-up sheet. Tourists typically can't find this place without someone showing them, and any bootlegger would know the rules, so either you got bad information or someone set you up. Neither of those things seem like reason enough to make you leave.
My sister told me, and I don't think she'd set me up. Not like this, at least. That's not really her style. She finished taking off her leggings and folded them. I could see the goosebumps raise on her skin from the cold. With a little shiver, she pulled off her tank top and quickly put it in her bag. There was a hot body beneath her sweater, a very hot body that was clad in nothing but a black bikini. And now my erection was not of the semi variety. I slid forward on the ledge I was sitting on, trying to get lower in the water. I wanted more distance between my crotch and the surface in case she looked down. She climbed into the pool and settled herself on the ledge across from me.
I'm George Thompson,
she said before I had a chance to finish. I was accustomed to people knowing me, even approaching me in public. I'd signed autographs on everything from dirty napkins to women's boobs. But for some reason, the fact that this strange girl knew who I was surprised me into silence. And she'd used my full name. No one called me George, not even my parents. I'd been GT since I was a kid. But coming from her, I liked it.
June Tucker,
she said. I leaned forward, reaching out my hand. Nice to meet you, June. Her eyes flicked downward once, and I almost drew back, but she gave me a businesslike shake. She reached over the side of the pool and dried her hands on her towel before tightening her ponytail. Something about the way she moved was mesmerizing. She wasn't graceful exactly, but there was a precision to her movements that was strangely appealing.
You have an erect penis.
I stared at her for a few seconds longer than I should have before looking down.
I did have an erection, and I was well aware of it, but I hadn't expected her to notice, and I really hadn't expected her to mention it like that. yeah, I guess I do.
Why?
Well, I don't really know exactly.
Are you meeting a lady friend, or did I interrupt you before you could complete your masturbatory emission?
No.
I ask because people typically come here to have intercourse. That's the reason the town created a sign-up sheet, no matter what people say about it. I assume your current state of arousal must have preceded my arrival.
I sat up straighter. If she was going to notice my junk and be so blunt about it, there wasn't much reason to hide. The water was obviously too clear to give me any cover. If she were anyone else, I'd assume she was trying to make me uncomfortable so I'd leave. But there wasn't a hint of manipulation in her tone. I liked that. No, I didn't come here to have sex with anyone, or to
masturbate,
she offered. Right. Not that either.
Then what's responsible for your erection? In adult males, it's uncommon to have increased blood flow to the penile capillaries without an external source of arousal. If you were under the age of 18 to 20, your physical state would be less surprising.
You mean if I was a horny teenager, you wouldn't question my hard-on?
Precisely.
I suppose that's fair. I don't know. Maybe it's you. The first flicker of true emotion I'd seen in her passed across her face. Had I surprised her?
That doesn't seem to be a likely possibility. Are you taking erectile dysfunction medication?
I snorted out a very unflattering laugh.
Like Viagra? No, definitely no need for that.
This was probably one of the weirdest conversations I'd ever had, but even talking in such straightforward terms about the fact that I was sporting a chubby wasn't bringing the big guy down. If anything, I was getting harder the longer we talked. June settled back against the pool, the water buoying her boobs. That was not helping the hard-on situation, not at all.
Is it bothering you?
I asked.
Your erection? No.
Okay. I swallowed, trying to think of something to say that didn't involve my man parts.
You knew my name. Do you watch football?
Another glimmer of emotion passed across her features. Her eyes lit up, but when she spoke, her voice was still monotone.
I follow a number of professional sports, but football is my favorite.
Despite her tone, I could feel something emanating from her, a spark that flared when she said favorite.
Awesome. Are you a Philly fan?
I don't follow teams, I follow players.
My mouth hooked in a grin. Do you follow me?
I did, prior to your injury.
Ouch.
Is your knee still causing you pain?
Sometimes, but that's not what I mean. I said ouch because you said you don't follow me anymore.
That's not what I said.
I crossed my arms. No, you said you followed me prior to my injury. Doesn't that mean you don't follow me now? Her eyebrows knitted together.
Since you're not playing, you're no longer generating player statistics. There's nothing for me to follow.
I said, understanding dawning. I feel you. You were into my stats, not so much my personality.
Precisely. I know very little about your personality.
But you know my numbers. June nodded.
More than 10,600 yards over your 9.5 seasons, 82 touchdowns, 4 2-point conversions, 7 fumbles, an additional 2,894 yards in punt and kickoff returns.
My jaw dropped as I listened to her distill my career into a chain of numbers. Wow, that's impressive.
I know.
You just keep all that stuff up there? I asked, tapping my own temple to indicate her head.
Yes, I have a natural propensity for numbers.
This girl was fascinating. All right, June Tucker. Do you know the stats for a lot of players?
Yes.
Who else do you know?
Would you like a list?
She asked. There was no sarcasm in her tone. She wasn't sassing me. I had no doubt if I said yes, she'd easily rattle off a list of players.
No, I don't need a list. I'm just curious how that works. How do you remember so many numbers?
She shrugged, and her tone remained nonchalant.
I have a high IQ and a nearly photographic memory when it comes to numbers.
What about other things? Do you have a photographic memory for stuff other than math?
My capacity for recalling information in a variety of subjects is much higher than average,
she said. But you're best at numbers.
Yes.
That's very impressive. The corners of her mouth twitched into the closest thing I'd seen to a smile.
Thank you.
I leaned back and rested my head against my hands. I liked this girl. Hoped I'd see more of her, and in a town this size, I had a feeling that was likely.
Chapter 5. June. The ice cream counter in Moonshine's Ice Cream and Cheese offered 12 different flavors, but I didn't need to look at the selection. It was February, which meant Rocky Road. November was chocolate, peppermint in December. January was strawberry. It was February, so I'd have Rocky Road.
Hi there, June.
Penny Waverly, the owner, came out of the back. She was my parents' age, and Cassidy and I had gone to school with her children. She'd opened the shop a few years after discovering she was lactose intolerant. She had declared she'd live vicariously through her customers, since she could no longer eat dairy.
Hello, Penny.
Hi, June. What can I get you? One scoop of Rocky Road in a sugar cone. She picked up the silver ice cream scoop and waved it back and forth.
Of course, I should have known. You want anything else with this? Cheese fondue? It's awful cold for ice cream.
The ice cream will be sufficient, thank you. She smiled as she scooped out a round ball of Rocky Road ice cream and placed it on top of a pointed cone.
Here you go. One scoop of Rocky Road on a sugar cone.
I took my ice cream and paid, then chose a seat at one of the round tables near a window. No one else was in the shop. She didn't do much business in the winter. Ice cream was much more popular when the weather was hot, although her selection of cheeses did attract customers, particularly on the weekends. But weekdays in the early afternoons were typically quiet in the winter, often just me and one or two other customers, which was exactly why I came in every Tuesday for an ice cream cone when the weather was cold. I liked being where other people weren't. The door jingled, and I looked up from my cone to find George Thompson entering the shop. The former all-pro receiver, and until his injury, star of my fantasy football team, was significantly taller in person than I'd expected. It was illogical, given that I'd known his height and weight, and all his other pertinent statistics, before I'd ever seen him in person. But his size was surprisingly intimidating. He ran a hand through his thick brown hair as he studied the selection. He hadn't seemed to notice me sitting here. He was indeed tall and wide. Broad shoulders stretched the limits of his winter coat, and his arms looked so long. When I'd seen him at Moonshine, he'd been seated. I hadn't gotten an adequate assessment of his size. Even in the hot spring, I hadn't realized how big he was. Certain body parts had certainly appeared very large. I felt my cheeks warm as I recalled seeing his erect penis beneath the water. It wasn't the first time I'd seen a man naked, and he hadn't appeared to care that I'd seen him unclothed, so it was curious that I now felt a surge of embarrassment over the incident. What an odd sensation. My facial capillaries were flushing with blood, and no doubt turning my cheeks red. It made me unsure whether I should look away, or perhaps sneak out of the shop before he could see me. I had a strange desire to flee. But then my eyes traveled down his long arms to his hands. Those hands that were so adept at catching a football, protecting it from the grasps of opposing players who meant to take it from him. Those hands were so appealing,
Long, thick fingers. Wide palms. They were huge. Much bigger than they appeared on TV. Of course, that made sense. Typically, players were surrounded by their teammates on televised games. Seeing a large man next to other large men had the effect of disguising their size difference compared to the average person. There were no other players here. Just George Thompson, with his height, and his broad shoulders, and his huge hands. And other huge things, currently hidden by his pants. I tore my eyes away. My heart rate had increased and the blood rushing to my face intensified. I could feel my pulse thumping in the hollow of my throat, beating in my wrists. My stomach tingled with an unfamiliar swirl of sensation. Was I getting sick? Perhaps I'd eaten something questionable and I was feeling the beginnings of a bout of food poisoning. I looked at my ice cream. The bottom of the scoop near the cone was beginning to soften. A drip was forming. But the odd fluttering in my stomach made me reluctant to eat any.
You might want to lick that before it drips on you.
What? I heard my voice ask the question, and a part of my brain scoffed at my own ridiculousness. I knew exactly what he'd said, and what he'd meant. There was no need to ask him to repeat it.